e a ka aha ho o kolo kolo ki e ki hano hano ua a ko ko ho maila. This Honorable Supreme Court is reconvened. E noho I lalo. Please be seated.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 17358, Makila Land Company versus Jonah Kiyomoku Kapu. Arguing for the petitioner, Daniel M. Gluck. Arguing for the respondent, Francis P. Hogan. Also appearing for the respondent, Ben Krebs. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Gluck and Mr. Hogan. Are you all ready to proceed today?
Yes, sir. Yes, I agree.
All right. Mr. Gluck, you reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning of 5 minutes to go, and we'll give you a warning as well for 5 minutes to continue your argument. Please proceed.
Chief Justice Rechtenwald, Associate Justices, good morning. Daniel Gluck for petitioner, Kiyomoku Kapu, who is here in the courtroom today with some members of his family. The Circuit Court and the ICA made several reversible errors in this case. We are here today to ask this court to correct those errors. For relief, Mr. Kapu asks for a relief in two steps. First, as to the 2019 ICA decision, he asks that this court vacate the Circuit Court's motion for judgment after remand, granted in 2017, and that this case be remanded to the Circuit Court so that Mr. Kapu has an opportunity to give his evidence and arguments in opposition to that motion. In step two, Mr. Kapu asks this court to vacate the Circuit Court's grant of summary judgment in favor of Makila, both on its claim for paper title and also on Mr. Kapu's counterclaim for adverse possession. I'd like to begin with the 2017 proceedings in Circuit Court. Mr. Kapu was unrepresented when he learned that the Circuit Court had ruled in favor of Makila on its motion for judgment after remand in his absence.
Mr. Gluck, had Mr. Kapu been appearing at the prior court appearances?
Regularly, Your Honor, yes. The Circuit Court had granted summary judgment in favor of Makila, I believe, in 2012, and so it was almost 4 years or a little over 4 years before the ICA ruled.
And when was it that he discovered that there had been a summary judgment entered against him? Where was he at that time? Was he in the process of discussing the case with another judge?
I don't believe it was in front of – oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. So that's correct. So he had another case pending with a different circuit court judge, also involving Makila Land Company. So he was represented by other counsel in that case. He learned about the disposition of this matter while in a case status conference on that case. But he learned about the ruling by the circuit court within days after the court issuing its written decision. So he notified the circuit court by letter 13 days after the circuit court had issued its written ruling in that case.
What do you think the circuit court should have done upon receipt of that letter?
I believe the circuit court should have treated that as a motion under Rule 5B of the circuit court. So the court should have construed that as a motion, should have set aside the order granting summary judgment or the judgment after remand, and should have given Mr. Kapu an opportunity to address that argument on the merits. Instead, the circuit court did nothing with it. The circuit court had also received a similar letter from Mr. Kapu's sister. And at that point, the circuit court entered a notice of ex parte communication in which it admonished the sister for sending a letter to the court ex parte, but otherwise took no action. So after the circuit court entered final judgment against Mr. Kapu, he then filed a motion. And in that motion, he cited to Rule 60, and in his reply in support of the motion, he cited to Rule 60 and also to Circuit Court Rule 5. So the circuit court should have been on clear notice that he was seeking relief in multiple ways, but regardless of how the motion was construed, it was very clear what Mr. Kapu was asking for. This court, on several occasions, has instructed both lower courts and agencies to construe filings by unrepresented parties as they were intended. Indeed, just a few months ago in the Villaver decision, the court discussed how a request for an interpreter should have been considered as a motion to withdraw admissions under Rule 36. Waltrip case as well is another example.
In the Villaver case, I think there was also a letter that was written to the court by the relative of the plaintiff I think it was the wife that was also asking for the court to give relief to the entry of default as a result of the request for admissions.
You may be right about that, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I don't know that detail of that case. So the circuit court's first mistake was in not treating the letter as a motion under Circuit Court Rule 5. The second mistake was in not granting his motion once he filed it for an opportunity to be heard on the merits of that case. When looking at whether there was proper notice, the circuit court just considered that there was a certificate of service. Essentially, the circuit court considered that fact to be dispositive and didn't look at any other factors as to whether notice was properly given in this case.
Didn't the notice actually have a wrong hearing date?
It did, Your Honor. It had the year before, so January 31, 2016 instead of 2017. I'm not sure that it made any practical difference insofar as my client didn't receive it, but I do think it interesting that the respondent is so interested in having my client follow every single rule of procedure, and when it comes to their own, they sort of shrug it off in a footnote in their brief.
And well, what's your response? I'm sorry, Justice Pollack?
Well, just that even if one were to assume your client received it, it had the wrong date, so the certificate of services wouldn't seem to be valid. I mean, it seems like there's a problem both ways.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree.
There was eventually a motion to vacate, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. So my client filed the motion while he was unrepresented. The circuit court heard that. They actually held a hearing on that motion, and it was denied. And in the transcript, from what I can tell from what the circuit court did, the circuit court ruled that the certificate of service essentially was dispositive, and also that Mr. Kapu had not presented any substantive arguments in support of why the original motion should not have been granted, even though at the time he was there trying to make that very argument. So Mr. Kapu had no way of knowing that that was his opportunity to make the arguments. It's just not the kind of thing that someone would think about, that they would have to make the substantive argument in going back and asking to make the argument.
And you've seen the record. Did it appear from the record that he had the opportunity to or did present substantive arguments on the motion for summary judgment?
I don't believe he had that opportunity, Your Honor. For the motion for, I'm sorry, is Your Honor asking about the motion for summary judgment or the motion for judgment after remand?
When the hearing was held on the motion to vacate, was there any indication that Mr. Kapu had the opportunity to address the motion for summary judgment at that time?
No, Your Honor, there wasn't. And I would have hoped that the circuit court judge would have alerted him that, okay, you're here in front of the court right now. Why don't you make the argument, or why don't we give you a couple weeks to file a brief on that motion?
So he wasn't even told that he was supposed to be making the arguments substantively?
He was never told that, Your Honor. No, there was a 9-minute hearing. Mr. Kapu spoke only briefly, but there was no discussion, no indication of any kind that he should have made that argument when he was there asking to make that argument.
If the basis for a motion to vacate is that you didn't get due process, you didn't get notice, what difference would it make as to the merits of what you missed? I mean, is this like basketball, no harm, no foul? I mean, I don't understand. I mean, if what you're saying is, look, I didn't get my chance to even present an argument, what difference would it make how good that argument would have been? I mean, we don't give hearings and the opportunity to be heard based on whether you're going to win or lose.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And indeed, I don't see anything in the text of Circuit Court Rule 5 that requires a party to make a substantive argument as to what they would have argued had they had the opportunity to do so. That is part of Rule 60, but again, as an unrepresented party, he should have been somehow informed by the court of the method by which he was to make that substantive argument. I wanted to turn to the second issue and this court's review of the 2016 ICA decision. I think the best place to start, obviously, is the plain language of 60259, but also this court's review of 60259 in the Waltrip case and also in the Corsac case. In both cases, the court was looking at how that statute should be interpreted, particularly in light of the legislative history, which the court looked at in the Waltrip case. So in Waltrip, this court was faced with the question of whether an appeal from an ICA final decision also allowed the petitioner to argue as to previous rulings of the ICA that weren't case dispositive. And so this court, in a 3-2 decision, said that, yes, this court does have jurisdiction to do so. And in so doing, the court looked at the legislative history of 60259. And there are two main reasons that the legislature established the ICA in 1979 after the Constitutional Convention of 1978. The legislature was looking at promoting efficiency within the courts. And second, the legislature was interested in ensuring that this court has the ability and the resources to rule on important questions of law. So my concern in if this court rules that it can't touch the 2016 ICA decision, if that's this court's ruling, then this court is tying its own hands as to its own adjudication and administration of its cases. And by that I mean when you have a case that comes to the ICA, if the ICA, as in this case, vacates in part, affirms in part, and remands, if a party petitions for cert from that decision, this court, if there's anything in the lower court proceedings that this court wants to review, it has to take cert then. Because if it doesn't take cert then this court is forever prohibited from looking at anything that happened in the case before.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Gluck, but let's move ahead to your point about important issues that needed to be considered. What issues do you think this court should be looking at that bear on the 2016 ICA decision?
As pointed out, albeit briefly, in the petition for certiorari, Your Honor, there are issues of material fact that the circuit court and the ICA ruled in favor of the moving party.
But did the intermediate court actually find no disputed issue of fact other than except as to the paper? In other words, when I read what they did, it just seems like they say, well, there was an inference on this, and there was an inference on this, and an inference on this. It doesn't ever say that there's no disputed fact as to all the factual issues which your client raised.
No, that's right, Your Honor.
In fact, what they seem to be doing is actually confusing the trial standard with the motion for summary judgment, because in a motion at a trial, there's a duty to present a prima facie case. And then the cases have shown that when you're looking at a prima facie case, yes, you can look at inferences to switch the burden. But that's not a summary judgment standard.
That's right, Your Honor.
So I'm not so sure they decided all these factual issues, and that they're beyond, that they shouldn't be re-evaluated on the motion for summary judgment.
No, I totally agree, Your Honor. And if I can, it's taken me some time to fully understand the genealogy and the lineal descent claims that are being put forth here. And I think a large part of that is that there are a lot of people with very similar, if not identical, names who are, in fact, different people. And so if I can give you just a couple examples from what was before the circuit court when it was ruling on the motion for summary judgment on paper title. So this is back in 2010, I believe. There's a record site at one, the issue is whether this person, Samuel Hakala'au, is the same as Samuel Kapu, who is the grandfather of my client. And respondent claims that it's the same person and that that person transferred title to Pioneer Mill, or at least had a deed to Pioneer Mill. But in the record, if they are the same person, there are four different possible birth dates for that person. The record at 138 says it's 1882 in December. The record at 189 says it's sometime between April of 1881 and 82. At 190, it says it's February of 1881. And 191, another person, Samuel Hakala'au, has a birth date of January 1889.
Can I interrupt and ask you the significance of different dates for Mr. Hakala'au's birth?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. So My client is...
Are you suggesting that it's not necessarily the same person, that there would be four different individuals, or what's the significance of what you're pointing out might be a discrepancy, perhaps, in birth date?
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. So respondent had argued that a person by the name of Samuel Hakala'o had transferred title to it or had given a deed to it, and that the title stems from there. My client claims that Samuel Hakala'o, that person, whoever he was, didn't have the right to transfer title because it didn't belong to him in the first place. And in fact, his grandfather, Samuel Kapu, the respondent was arguing that it's the same person as Samuel Hakala'o. But my point in reciting the various page numbers, Your Honor, is to show that even in the record before the circuit court at the time, there were disputed facts as to whether this person was the same person or several different people, such that it should have gone to trial on the question of whether Makila had title in the first place.
Could you address why shouldn't that issue then have come up to us on certiorari?
Certainly. So,
if they made these errors.
The only explanation I have, Your Honor, is that my client did not know that the ICA had ruled at the time, and that's in the transcript to the circuit court in 2017. Obviously, 60259 is jurisdictional in that sense, and so once he realized it, he couldn't have appealed.
But actually, the ICA vacated the circuit court's final judgment in terms of its ruling on the paper title claim.
That's right, Your Honor.
So it was vacated.
Correct.
Back to square one on that. I'm trying to understand your position about what the implication would be.
Certainly.
What the extent you would be vacating what happened in 2016.
Well, I think Justice McKenna is absolutely right that it was vacated and remanded. I think it's a little difficult because looking at the ICA decision, the tenor of it suggests that they wanted only to remand for the limited issue, but the practical effect is that it's vacated and remanded. And I think that makes Mr. Kapu missing this hearing particularly important, because if he is going to have that opportunity to contest the entirety of paper title, then obviously that's of huge importance to him.
Wouldn't our, I'm sorry.
What about the adverse possession claim? Is the analysis the same there? What's your analysis with regard to that?
It's
same claim.
Essentially the same, Your Honor, that he had presented evidence to the circuit court. The circuit court made inferences in favor of the moving party. The disputed evidence should have gone to a jury.
But on that issue, the ICA affirmed the summary judgment.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, and so what we would be able, on what basis would we be able to set that aside now?
I think on the same standard that you would review any erroneously granted summary judgment motion. So for it would be de novo review, and there.
But what's your response to the argument by Makila that that portion of the case is over and can't be reviewed? What's your response to that?
Sure. I think I'd go back to my earlier comments about this court does have jurisdiction, in my view, to review the previous decision of the ICA once this case is now properly before it on a timely application for cert.
But where is the issue of disputed fact as to whether there was an open and notorious use of this property?
Certainly. If you'll give me just a moment, Your Honor. Okay. On adverse possession, my client had submitted declarations from employees of Pioneer Mill. That's at the record at 584 and 926. They'd also submitted their own testimony talking about how they tended to grave sites, how they harvested willy-willy seed, and I believe there were some other contentions regarding their use of the land. I also think because you've got multiple family members, they can be in privity in terms of the claim for adverse possession.
Mr. Gluck, thank you. In the ICA's decision, it says, for the foregoing reason, the circuit court's May 8th final judgment is vacated in part insofar as it granted summary judgment on Makila's paper title and quieted title. I assume they mean quiet title or quieted title. So those are out the window. You can go back on both quiet title and paper title, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I mean, they vacated insofar as summary judgment was granted on paper title and quiet title.
Yes.
Okay, so both of those are fair game then.
I think so, Your Honor, although it's not entirely clear reading the rest of the ICA opinion what it intended.
Because there was no partial summary judgment granted, I mean, as to particular parts of the claim.
No, that's right, Your Honor.
So if there had been a application for cert to us on the granting of the on the other portions of the paper title, we would be actually issuing an advisory opinion because maybe they'd never even prove that there's a paper document. I mean, we could be going through a...
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. Okay. I think, unless the court has further questions at this time...
Well, it was vacated and remanded for a motion for summary judgment. I mean, for a hearing, right, on the motion for summary judgment on the issue of the paper title.
It was vacated and remanded as to paper title. And what's interesting is that the circuit court didn't expressly rule on my client's counterclaim for lineal descent. As the ICA had said, it was impliedly dismissed when it granted summary judgment for paper title in favor of Makila, also was the summary judgment came just a few months after the complaint was filed, and it was before the discovery deadline had passed as well. But I think it's, again, and as I've said before, I don't know that it's entirely clear what the ICA meant, but I think the impact of their decision is that it was vacated and remanded.
And after remand, the hearing was held, and?
And my client didn't receive notice and therefore didn't show up.
Okay.
Adverse possession was a counterclaim, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and the ICA said we're vacating as to paper title, remanding, but affirmed in all other respects. And your position is that despite that ruling, we can go back and reach the counterclaim as well?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the reason for that is?
Well, again, I think the first step is I believe this court has jurisdiction to review the older case. And the second step is that I believe that both the circuit court, especially the circuit court, granted summary judgment by giving deference to disputed facts that were proffered by the moving party.
Okay. Anything further at this time, Mr. Block?
No, thank you.
All right, we'll hear from Mr. Hogan.
It's still morning. Good morning, Chief Justice Recknemald and Associate Justices. I managed to get through that without giving the wrong name for the Chief Justice, which was unlike my last appearance in this court. I'm going to take this in the order of the issues raised in the petition, or in the application for certiorari. Counsel argued in that application that there was a denial of due process after remand. We take strong issue with that. The linchpin of that denial of due process claim is the claim that no notice was given. And the applicant, Mr. Kapu, before the circuit court, claimed that he not only didn't get notice of the hearing for summary judgment after remand, but he didn't get notice of the memorandum opinion, he didn't get notice of the judgment on appeal. Although it gets to be difficult because the first appeal dropped out of Hoiiki, we found the record in the court Kukua, and there is a note in there that both of those documents were mailed to all of the pro se defendants, and the only one that was returned undelivered was to a different party.
Had there been any other motions for summary judgment in which Mr. Kapu or his attorney did not appear?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. I don't know for sure, but there were at least four in the circuit court.
Were you aware that his attorney had passed away?
I personally was not, no. I think the first we learned about it was during the case that's not before the court, the Apa'a case. I think that also is something the court needs to keep in mind when it evaluates this claim that I didn't get notice.
Well, could you?
Kapu has been in litigation with Makila Land Company over various kuleana in the valley for a couple of decades.
But wouldn't that, I'm interested in your view, Mr. Hogan, about what the circuit court was thinking when the circuit court decided not to set aside the summary judgment and have a hearing on this matter, because, as you said, it appeared that he'd been active, Mr. Kapu had been active previously. He responded, seemed like, pretty quickly after he found out the summary judgment.
Well, he was represented by counsel up until through the briefing of the first appeal.
Uh-huh.
Mr. McCarty, you know, for what he could do, I think he did a pretty aggressive job. He did not sit back and let this thing.
So it doesn't, I'm unclear about what indicated to the judge that he actually did get service, which I assume is what she was thinking, because he, you know, he had participated in the past in a way that seemed pretty regular. In addition to that, I think the notice that he received wasn't actually accurate, right?
There was a mistake in the last digit of the year, but that shouldn't have confused anybody,
because
it was the past year.
And he was pro se, so I'm reaching for what was she thinking?
That I believe what she was thinking is that Mr. McCarty had died. We knew that. Mr. Kapu had notified both the circuit court, I believe, that the ICA by letter. In fact, the ICA traded one letter as a motion to discharge Mr. McCarty and to proceed pro se and to change the address for service of process, which it did. In doing that, I think it, like so many cases, when a party is pro se, if the party looks at the pleading and doesn't see that it can do anything with it, a lot of times they don't show up, Your Honor. And Mr. McCarty was doing the appearance and the argument in all of the other motions.
Well,
it wasn't that out of the ordinary on a circuit court bench. And I know at least four of the judges on this panel have been in the circuit court, and sometimes pro ses don't show up.
And sometimes they, but when you receive a motion to set it aside before judgment has entered, saying, I didn't know about it, I heard about it, at a last Friday settlement conference, which was the date of the order, apparently, in a settlement conference in another case involving the same parties, right? I mean, this is not someone that's ignoring the cases.
No, it's not, Your Honor.
And the notice you sent gave the wrong year, even if he had received it. How is he supposed to show up the year before?
Well, I think that would have prompted a phone call or a check with the court.
Well, you know, but your notice said it was the year before.
I understand that, Your Honor. I just don't think that's a substantive defect.
But you should still get the benefit of that. Your client should still get the benefit of sending a notice that said to appear the year before. And the person should be defaulted on the grounds that he received it and ignored it, which is what you're arguing here today.
Well,
he received it, he ignored it, and so therefore this case should just go forward.
He wasn't defaulted, Your Honor. The court took his motion to vacate, heard it, asked him what defense he was going to raise, because he said
after it entered the judgment, the letter is a motion.
Okay.
It's a motion,
Your Honor. And Mr. Kapu, at that time, remember, the only thing that had been remanded to the circuit court was to address the issue of whether there was a deed from Pioneer Mill to Makila for this particular
This ICA vacated the paper title and quiet title.
It had to, Your Honor.
And you know, in terms of, it was vacated, and so therefore, it vacated the final judgment as to paper title and quiet title. So therefore, it appears that that whole issue is open, clearly open.
Your Honor, respectfully, when reading the memorandum opinion, I do not believe that the circuit court believe that there was any issue outstanding on paper title other than whether the deed from Pioneer Mill to Maquila Ranch.
But the judgment on appeal doesn't say that. It doesn't say on the limited issue of this. It says we're vacating the final judgment as to paper title and quiet title.
Address the issue about whether Mr. Koppel was given a fair opportunity to address the merits or was put on notice when he went in for that hearing that he was required to address the merits as opposed to simply asking the court for the opportunity to address the merits.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the point that remember where we are in this case. We're in 2017 now. The case was filed in 2009. There's been discovery, there's been depositions, productions of documents, all of that stuff has gone on. We've had four summary judgment hearings. We've had one appeal to the ICA. Facts and issues are pretty well thrashed out to the extent anyone can ever expect to do it when we're looking at a title and issues about people who lived in the 19th century. And when we get to the motion to vacate, the judge simply, and Mr. Kapu says, I would like the opportunity to put on evidence to contradict the court's ruling. And remember, at that time, respectfully, I understand we disagree, Your Honor. At that time, the court was thinking that the only thing that we've ruled on was whether there was a deed from Pioneer Mill to Maquila for land commission.
But wasn't the motion to set aside?
Excuse me?
There was the motion to set aside summary judgment, wasn't it? Isn't that the motion you're talking about now?
I'm talking about the motion to vacate.
The motion to vacate, okay.
Yes.
So that's the motion. So if he's saying, I want to put on evidence about the motion, and this is about the motion to vacate.
And she asked, what evidence do you want to put on? Knowing that this case had proceeded before Judge August for years and years and years. And his answer was, Pioneer Mill didn't have title to give to Maquila. That was his answer. And when the judge looks at that and looks at the record, she felt that wasn't a meritorious defense at that point.
Wait a second. Where did all this come up about he didn't get notice? He normally went to the P.O. box in Lahaina and that he lived in Oahu. Where's that coming from?
Your Honor, I don't know where that's coming from. He gave the court the address for service of process for service.
So you're saying he never argued that? How did it get in the record?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not really familiar with what part of the record you're looking at. What I do know is that Mr. Kapu told the courts that his address for service of process was 562A Front Street, Lahaina, if I have the address right, and the court ordered that be used as the address, and that's the address that he used on the front of his pleadings when he did file, for example, the motion to vacate, his reply to the motion to vacate, that's the address.
So you're saying that when he was asked what's your substantive argument, he said, I contend Pioneer didn't have title, which basically is opening up the question of whether there was good paper title to Pioneer, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and so why isn't that now properly an issue before us as to whether that was within the scope or not within the scope of what was contemplated by the remand and or whether that was correct analysis of the law?
Your Honor, respectfully, I think that's the distinction that between Mr. Gluck's argument and my argument, which is that no, on remand, the circuit court looked at the opinion and the remand, the judgment on remand, and concluded that there was only one issue left to establish because the ICA had already found no issues of fact about the rest of the chain of title from the awardee to Pioneer Mill. And that's why Mr. Gibson filed the motion for summary judgment after remand on the one issue that to connect Pioneer Mill to Maquila for the land commission award.
Mr. Gluck's argument that we have the power and should look at the entirety of the issues that were resolved or reportedly resolved by the ICA in 2016.
Your Honor, I definitely disagree with that portion of his argument. I don't think it's consistent with Corsac won. If I can recall correctly, the court looked at that and concluded that even though there was an amended judgment on appeal, I believe it was, which made a non-substantive change in the judgment on appeal, the time for filing a petition for cert ran from the original judgment on appeal, and the failure to file within that time, even though you were within the time on the amended judgment on appeal, meant that the Supreme Court did not have jurisdiction to address the issues raised in the petition, in the application, excuse me. So in the way I read that case, it's, you know, it's jurisdictional. Yes, one of our positions today before this court is that this court does not have jurisdiction to look at the 2016 ICA decision and analyze whether or not the ICA was correct in its analysis of what the circuit court did.
At any point in time, did you move to clarify the ICA's decision? I mean, apparently it's conflicting, and the substance, it appears that they may not have meant to set aside the motion for summary judgment regarding quiet title, but it actually did set aside the quiet title. Was there any motion for clarification?
No, we didn't. We didn't view, in light of the memorandum opinion, we did not view that there was a need for any clarification. It was clear to us what the ICA was telling Makila and its lawyers and the circuit court to address, which is, okay, you've done everything else. You haven't connected this land commission award to Makila through Pioneer Mill. Do it.
So, you don't, so or, it was meaningless. Their conclusion, you just ignored the conclusion that said that they're remanding for on quiet title?
We didn't ignore it, Your Honor. We interpreted the memorandum opinion and the judgment on appeal consistently, which was telling us that because you didn't link up the last step, you can't quiet title. Mm. So now if you want to quiet title, you're going to have to link up that last step.
But all the other steps going up to the last step, did the ICA at any point say there's no disputed facts as to all those other prior facts leading up to it?
Your Honor, I think that's the gist of its opinion. And
but do they say that? I mean, they say that there's an inference. One way to read the ICA opinion is it was an obvious flaw in the last step. So they figured, look, we'll just get ourselves up to the last step. We'll say that there's an inference, and we'll get to the last step. It's clearly flawed there. Bingo, we vacate the granting of the quiet title disposition, and bingo, they're back where they start. And that's where they are. It vacated the entire thing. It didn't say it was partially correct and partially incorrect, and we're only remanding only on that portion.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, when we reviewed the ICA opinion in 2016, the memorandum opinion, it was clear to us that the ICA was reaching the conclusion that Makila had demonstrated by admissible evidence all of the links in his chain of title up to Pioneer Mill.
But, you know, it's interesting, Mr. Hogan. I think that the record would certainly support your proposition that the ICA thought that it was finding some facts that were in favor of Makila in terms of the chain of title. But as Justice Pollack has pointed out, this is a appeal that has to do with a summary judgment. We are supposed to essentially give an inference in favor of the non-moving party. And then if you look at the decision of the ICA, they spend a lot of analysis on the facts, explaining why certain title issues, whether it has to do with whether Sarah Peter actually was in the chain of title, or whether the differing birth dates that were referred to by Mr. Gluck and explaining why those aren't significant. After a while, it appears that they're kind of making the point that there are still some potentially disputed issues. So in that context, to then send it back and say, well, there at least is one clear area in which there's a disputed fact, and therefore we'll just send it back to redo the quiet title action, would have some logic to it.
Your Honor, I would think that the ICA would attempt to provide guidance to the lawyers if they thought that there were other gaps that had not been demonstrated to its satisfaction on the summary judgment standard, that it would have told us. Remember, there were essentially, Makila moved for summary judgment that it had a good chain of title by inheritance or conveyance from the wardee of the Land Commission ward to itself. Makila also moved for summary judgment that Mr. Kapu did not. And one of the things you have to remember when you're reading all of this stuff in the ICA opinion is, which chain of title are they talking about, and which chain of title are they drawing inferences from, about? And when the court comes to the conclusion that Makila has presented a chain of title, a good chain of title up to Pioneer Mill, that implies that it's that Kapu didn't.
That there it implies they're finding that there's no issue of fact up to that point in the chain of title. I mean, you could say that, except the nature of the discussion seems to suggest that Mr. Kapu had something to argue if there was a trial on it.
Your Honor, if we didn't have the benefit of oral argument before the Intermediate Court of Appeal, no, we did not move to clarify because we did not think that the way the court ended the opinion left any ambiguity about what it expected Makila to do on remand.
Weren't there questions of fact as to whether or not some of the people in the alleged chain were the same person?
I believe the court concluded that the admissible evidence that Makila submitted in support of its chain of title, in fact, eliminated those questions.
But it didn't use that language. It said there's a reasonable inference. It keeps saying there's a reasonable inference.
It seems like they were treating it like a trial standard. Like, yeah, I mean, but this is a summary judgment. If there's genuine issues of material fact, you don't get summary judgment.
Well, okay. Well, there's two. Let's take both sides now. There's Makila's chain of title. There's Mr. Copper's chain of title. When a party in a quiet title case files for summary judgment on the whole case, he's basically saying, I have title, you don't have title. And it's kind of a plaintiff-defendant situation. Plaintiff has title, defendant doesn't have title. And it puts the defendant to his proof to establish that he at least has a prima facie claim of title.
Actually, I think the standard is that the move-on has to establish that there's no genuine issue of material fact. And so, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, based on my review of the record, there do appear to be some questions of fact.
It's similar to an affirmative defense, Your Honor, if the defendant has the burden of proof to establish his own chain of title.
No. You're the move-on seeking to quiet title. You have to establish that you have title.
Yes,
you have
Your
to establish
Honor.
Beyond a reasonable, there's no genuine issue of material fact. I'm not saying this is not a trial. But if there's competing facts as to who's this and who's this and they have different names, that's a genuine issue of material fact.
Your Honor, I respectfully believe that in the quiet title context particularly, each party has a duty to prove its own claim of title.
Right.
And that means Mr. Kapu has the obligation and...
Didn't he present evidence that there may be other people that had a similar name, but it may not have been the person that a similar name to your person? It's there's questions. And when you review a summary judgment, it's based on the entirety of the record. Are there genuine issues of material fact? This is not a trial.
I understand, Your Honor. It is not a trial. But it is incumbent upon all the parties who are making the claim to put forward their claim. When the plaintiff or one of the parties, if it was Mr. Kapu who moved for summary judgment on his claim of title, paper title, and said Makila does not have a good claim of paper title, Makila would have an obligation in order to meet its obligation under Rule 56 to put on admissible evidence showing that it does have There's two ways to do it. You can say, showing that there are issues of fact about my chain of title and therefore I didn't get to try it, or basically put on evidence showing that I have a good paper title. Mr. McCarty attempted to show that Mr. Kapu had good paper title. And that's what the ICA evaluated. And it looked at it and said, no, Mr. McCarty didn't.
So that means your client did, even though there are questions of fact as to whether your client did.
Well, Your Honor, Judge Liu and the Intermediate Court of Appeals concluded that there were no issues of fact about our client's chain of title. I understand the court that, Justice McKenna, you look at the record at least with a different perspective, and get a different outcome. But that doesn't change the fact that when you get into these kind of cases, this is what you do. That's the way we do it. But I want to get back to the fact that
I don't think that. What do you mean that this is what we do it? I don't know what you mean by that. You mean when people dispute whether or not there's a chain of title, it's like treated like a trial instead of summary? I don't know what you mean.
It's almost like a paper trial. You don't have, and you saw it, you don't have much, if any, affidavit testimony except for authenticating documents. So it's documents. Here are my documents. Here's the deed. Here's the probate.
But this wasn't a trial. This was a summary judgment.
Yes, it was, Your Honor. But that's the way these things play out.
You know, the law is pretty clear. You have to show that there's no genuine issue of material effect on the record. Isn't John Paul Kapu in your chain of title?
Who?
John Paul Kapu?
No, Your Honor.
No? Okay.
I don't believe so. I will stand corrected. But my point that I wanted to get into, talking about the ICA's 2016 decision, is respectfully, I don't believe this court has the power to review it anymore, because no cert petition for cert, application for cert was filed in a timely manner. And I understand what you're saying. We have to go back and prove our title. But I don't think that changes the fact that the ICA ruled that Mr. Kapu did not have a paper title claim to the property, and he didn't have an adverse possession claim to the property. It said in all other respects, the judgment of the circuit court is affirmed.
I see where you're going if we make a determination that he was able to address a motion for summary judgment, but if he wasn't able to appear at a hearing on a motion for summary judgment, then there wouldn't have been a basis upon for the ICA to make its decision.
2016, the motions for summary judgment that are addressed in the 2016 ICA opinion, the last one occurred in 2012. The hearing that we're talking about Mr. Kapu not receiving adequate notice of occurred in 2017. So the issue in 2017, what we're saying, the only issue that's left is whether Makila has good title.
Well, that's if you interpret the ICA decision to mean that those issues were set aside, that they were decided with respect to paper title and adverse possession.
That's the way I read the statement that in all other respects, the judgment of the circuit court was affirmed.
What's your response to Mr. Gluck's argument that the 2016 rulings were, in effect, still subject to review, that not jurisdictional, it's prudential, there's good reason to wait until the final outcome and everything is up before us before we definitively rule on those issues?
Your Honor, Mr. Gluck referenced 602-5, subsection A1, says the court's jurisdiction is limited to hear and determine questions which are properly brought before it by relevant to us, an application for writ of certiorari. 602-59C says an application may be filed no later than 30 days after the filing of the judgment on appeal. In HRAP 40.1A, this court is even more explicit. The application shall be filed within 30 days after the filing of the Intermediate Court of Appeals judgment on appeal. The point we're making is that It's jurisdictional. It's not jurisdictional.
So
it's not provincial.
Have...
It's not subject to equities or anything else. It's like filing a notice of appeal from a judgment, the original judgment. If you don't do it in time, tough luck, guy. If you thought you had an appealable issue, you slept on your rights. That's the point that we're making, why the court's ICA 2016 decision. And I look, for example, at, am I pronouncing it right, Crosbrack? I know that one of the things the court first noted, the rule for appeals, that if you don't appeal within the time permitted to appeal, you're out the door. And then it looked and said, okay, well, what do we do about this situation where we had an amended judgment on appeal, but the amended judgment on appeal really didn't address anything substantively. And this court concluded that it didn't have jurisdiction to address the application for cert because it wasn't filed timely based on the original judgment on appeal. To me, that's the law as writ by this court with respect to the timeliness of petitions for cert.
That was a case about clerical or typo. That was a case about a clerical error, though, that didn't alter the judgment. I mean, that's what that case was about, right? So it wasn't that, yeah.
Well, what the point was, Your Honor, that the applicant was trying to use the amended judgment on appeal to measure his time, and the court said the technical error didn't give you more time, guy.
Right, because it was just a clerical error and it didn't actually amend the judgment.
Right.
But when there is an amended judgment that amends the substance of the judgment, then we do allow more time.
Yes, you do, Your Honor. Yes. The point of COSRAC was, because it was technical, your 30 days ran from the original judgment, and that's final. There's no more, no discretion, no jurisprudential issues involved, no equities to weigh. You didn't do it in time. You're out of luck.
Is the ICA able to temporarily remand a case?
I would think it could, Your Honor.
Would the ICA, let's say that the ICA did rule very clearly, had ruled very clearly that the only issue is this one step. Would they have been able to temporarily remand it at that point, or would they have had to issue a final judgment? Judgment on appeal.
I hazard to speak with too much authority on appellate jurisdiction, but I suspect it might be able to do that.
Temporarily remand.
Temporarily. Well, I know there's remands to address issues with the record on appeal. If that is akin to what you're talking about, then I would say yes.
But if granted, it vacated the judgment as the paper title claim
of
and quieted title, right? So the that's what I'm reading. It is vacated, the judgment is vacated, and this is, again, the ICA in 2016, the judgment is vacated in part insofar as it granted summary judgment on a paper title claim and quieted title in favor of Aquila. So at that point, the judgment has been vacated. Does that, in essence, mean we're back to the beginning or back to square one in terms of whether the, in this case, the defendant needed to appeal? Because the judgment's been vacated, so in a way, that's a favorable outcome for Mr. Kapu, correct?
As you phrased it, yes, Your Honor, I was quickly trying to find if I had the judgment on appeal in front of me.
Appears I don't. Yeah, I'm reading from the ICA's SDO, and I don't have the judgment. I was just tracking the language of the SDO.
Right. Look at that. I didn't put it in the sequence. I don't have the judgment in front of me, Your Honor. If you can bear with me a second. My time is up, Your Honor.
Well, we'll look for it in the record. Anything further at this point that you want to bring the court's attention?
No, Your Honor. All the other issues I was going to bring up are also addressed in our brief on the application for certiorari.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hogan. Mr. Gluck, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just very briefly, in response to some questions earlier about whether the circuit court had offered Mr. Kapu any sort of opportunity to introduce evidence, I'd encourage the court to look at the transcript. It's the April 18th, 2017 transcript. It's very brief, and I don't see anything in there in which the court suggested to Mr. Kapu that he should produce evidence or argument as to the motion for judgment upon remand. So I'm happy to answer further questions, but I've...
Again, I'd appreciate your assistance in answering the same questions I was asking Mr. Hogan. You have the ICA seemingly having resolved this case, particularly with regard to adverse possession, but arguably with regard to other issues on the paper title. Why was there not an obligation, or jurisdiction, why was there not an obligation to appeal at that time that could bar us from considering those issues now?
Your Honor, Mr. Kapu, I believe, could have appealed at that time, but I don't think that it bars this court from reviewing it the second time around.
Why not? I mean, you talked about judicial economy. Why wouldn't that have resulted in judicial economy if we took care of it in 2016 instead of waiting until today?
I think you could have, Your Honor, but I don't think that you're obligated to do so. I think that if this court reviews a petition for cert and it's a kind of interlocutory order like this one, I think this court has the authority to let it go back down and let the circuit court resolve whatever remaining issues are on remand and then hear it when it comes back up again. That doesn't mean that the court is obligated to hear it the second time around, but I think the court has the power to do so.
Would the analysis be the same for the adverse possession claim?
Yes, Your Honor.
Even though with regard to that, it appears the court, the ICA, thought it currently definitively resolved that claim.
Yes, Your Honor, but in terms of jurisdiction, I think that this court has jurisdiction over the case and can review anything that happened previously.
Because the case was sent back.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Anything further at this time?
No, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you to both Mr. Gluck and Mr. Hogan for your arguments today. The court's going to take this matter under advisement. I also, on behalf of the court, want to express our appreciation to Mr. Gluck for his participation in the appellate pro bono project with regard to this case. Thank you to both of you.
Please rise. Ua ho'oku i mai ne ke aha ho'okolokolo ki hanohano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.